So in your bulletin today, you have this little card, and I'm going to invite the ushers, or maybe Rick or someone, if they would just walk past with a pencil, because today I'm going to invite us to actually write out some people that we would be praying for this week. And this is a practical way for us to bless others, beginning with prayer. And so it says, since the very beginning of our story with God, he has demonstrated his deep love for us through his blessing, and in turn, we become a blessing to others. So God has blessed us, and we're called to bless others, and we begin with prayer. So we recognize that God is at work in the lives of people around us, even when we may not see that or recognize that. And so we're invited then to join God in that work. And so our prayer is, where do you want me, Lord, to join you in your work in someone's life? And so there's a little thing in here that's called a Frank list. And it is just a quick reminder of the people that we can think about to pray for. It's friends, relatives, acquaintances, neighbors, co-workers. And as we think about that over the next 15 minutes or so, I'm going to invite you to begin to ask God, what names would you like me to be praying for this year? And then actually to write them down on both sides of these prayer cards. And then the invitation is for us to bring this prayer, or have this prayer marker with us, so that we can be reminded to keep praying for these people, just like those pictures remind me to pray for those people. At the end of the service today, after we share in communion, I'm going to invite us to tear off the outside piece and bring that and lay it on the communion table, because that particular marker will be prayed for over the church, or by the church, over the next 6 weeks in our Wednesday night prayer labs. And then they will go on to the Northwest Conference, they'll be prayed, and then on to the annual meeting of the church, and they'll be prayed over by the whole church. And so the desire is for the people on this list to come one step closer to knowing the great love of God through Jesus Christ. So I want to invite us to take a deep breath. You ready? And then let it out. Let's do it one more time. Ready? Deep breath. And let it out. There's only one reason that we are still breathing today. So, I have a question for you. What do you have to do tomorrow? I'm thinking a little bit about that. Sometimes I get a little distracted, and today it seems like it's been a busy week, and sometimes that tends to make me think more about, well, what's coming, what's next? You know, I got a whole long list of things that I need to get done tomorrow, a lot of have-tos, and it's probably impossible for me to ever get that list done. Does anybody know what I mean? Sometimes it's long. Yeah, you're smiling a little bit. So while I try to check off these things in my head right now, I want you to turn to the person next to you and ask them, what do you have to do tomorrow? So do that. Turn to them and ask them, what do you have to do tomorrow? And then listen to the answer. Apparently, I have long lists, because you're still talking. So what are some of those have-to-dos tomorrow? Anybody want to share?
Work.
Anything else? Work, yeah. Babysit, all right. Yes. School, yes, that is exciting. Anything other? Any other have-tos?
Fly.
Well, that's interesting. Wow. So there's a lot of have-to-dos, you know, that we have in our lives, that big long list. And, you know, there's a few things that I can think of, have-to-dos. Maybe, you know, we go someplace, we're flying someplace. That's very interesting. Going to work, going to school, some of those same old, it seems like. Maybe we have to go to the grocery store or the doctor or get our banking done or whatever it may be. There's so many things that we have to do. You know, in Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis, he writes, "Each morning when you wake up, all your wishes and hopes for the day rush at you like wild animals." You know, it's kind of true, isn't it? It's like, woo, wake up and wow, there's so much to get done today. So I think about a lot of people who have long lists of have-tos, and, you know, there seems to be, like, not a lot of passion about that list, is there, sometimes? You know, I especially notice that I think sometimes, you know, in us guys, it's kind of like, yeah, we're just kind of going through the motions day by day. And Pastor Dave Ferguson, he says, "I was talking to a friend of mine one day who was complaining about he had all this old stuff, same old thing, every day, every day." And he explained, "You have to get up at the same old time, shut off the same old alarm clock, you have to walk into the same old bathroom, look at the same old face in the mirror, get in the same old shower, dry off with the same old towel." I'm really glad that we got new towels this week, Cheryl, that's pretty cool. And put on the same old clothes. You have to walk down to the same old kitchen and get the same old bowl and eat the same old cereal and drink the same old coffee and read the same old paper, kiss goodbye to the same old wife. Now, I'm glad I don't have to do that. So then you have to drive to the same old car or down the same old road to the same old job to do the same old work and laugh at the same old jokes the same old boss tells the same old way, and you clock out at the same old time and you have to get back into the same old car and drive down the same old road and pull into the same old garage and hug the same old kids and walk into the same old kitchen and sit down at the same old dinner. And finally, you walk into the same old family room and sit in the same old recliner and watch the same old Wheel of Fortune and fall asleep in the same old chair. And then you have to crawl into the same old bed and ask the same old wife that same old question and get the same old answer, roll over, set the old alarm clock, and get up the next day and start the same old thing all over again." You know, too many people, I think that that's how we have to live our lives. I don't want the same old thing, do you? You know, there's only one reason that we are still breathing today. Not for the have to, but for the have to. And that have to is to engage in God's mission in the world. You know, the only reason that we are still breathing is to engage in the mission of God, our mission. You know, you and I don't want to wake up and do the same bored thing every day. We want to wake up each morning with passion and purpose and desire and look forward to the things we have for the day. And, you know, there still is a lot of have-tos. That's just part of life. And actually, some of those are good. Some of those are comforting. But there's more. There's some things that we also have to do that we can be passionate about in our lives. And something that you and I have to do in our life is that mission of God. So Frederick Buchner said, "Our calling is where our greatest passion meets the world's greatest need." You know, there's something amazing when we start to think about that. Our greatest calling, our greatest mission, intersects with where the world's greatest need is. And that is our mission. Over the next 5 weeks, we're going to talk about engaging that mission through this blessed initiative of the Covenant Church. And as we do that, we're going to discover our mission is very compelling in the things that we have to do. So today's passage that we read, we discover Jesus' mission. Jesus himself had a cause that was so compelling that he woke up every day engaged, you know, thinking, "This is what I have to do." And it all comes to a climax in this morning resurrection scene that we read. We have Mary coming to the tomb and waiting there and seeing that it's empty. You know, they've been grieving that Jesus is gone. He's dead. You know, he was a wonderful person. He lived, he taught, he worked, he healed. He did amazing miracles. He demonstrated the kingdom of God. But there he lay in the tomb. And on this Sunday morning, Mary encounters something completely unexpected, something completely off her radar. Jesus said to her, "Mary," and she turned around and cried, "Teacher." Jesus is alive. And then he not only demonstrates that he's alive, that there's so much more to this life with Jesus than they had ever expected, but now he calls her to do something more. "Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and to your Father, to my God and to your God." And Mary went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things. Can you imagine Mary's excitement in what she had to do? I mean, wow, huh? She can't hardly believe that Jesus is alive, that he's revealed himself to her, that he's standing right there. And then he tells her to go and tell others what she has experienced. You know, I don't think she was thinking, what am I going to say? You know, how am I going to explain this? She just ran because she was so excited, so moved. It was just so amazing that she went there and she said, "He's alive, he's alive, he's alive." And, you know, they couldn't hardly believe it themselves, but that was her passion, that was her desire, because her life had been transformed in an instant, in a moment, of what Jesus had done. And it says the disciples were overjoyed, verse 20. When they saw the Lord, and again Jesus said, "Peace be with you." You know, peace be with you from that terror and that fear of what's going to happen to them now, and all their hopes crushed because their Savior had died, and now there he is, and he speaks peace to them. You know, this overwhelming, calming sense that all is well, and hey, you're called to something marvelous and wonderful. "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." And with that, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit." You know, it's interesting to think about this mission, isn't it? It's not so much our mission originally. It's Jesus' mission. It's God's mission. You know, God's mission began in the Garden of Eden. You know, when the first two people, Adam and Eve, turned away from God and they chose their own way instead of God's way, and they chose a path that took them far from God. Even in the garden, they went to hide from God rather to be in this close, intimate relationship of love that they had known with the Father. And the Father comes to them and calls out, "Where are you?" Not that he couldn't find them, but "Where are you?" And it's this invitation to return, this invitation to come back to their Abba, to their Father. And so Jesus came and he continues that mission of the Father by drawing people to him and calling them. And in his death and resurrection, he calls his disciples. "Now it's your mission," he says. Now he breathes on them his Spirit and his power, and he says, now go and share this amazing love of God and this amazing story of that Jesus is alive, of the resurrection, that others may come to know Jesus too, that they might come closer to him. So he's alive. That's the first thing. The second thing is Jesus sends out his disciples. This is the have to. This is the amazing part of the thing that we're called to do and be. The Father sent Jesus on that mission, and he sends his disciples. So we discover that because Jesus has a mission, we have a mission. We have something that we have to do. In 2006, we had these Bringing My World to Christ, it was called, little prayer cards here. And I had a few names written down on them. And one of them was praying for two couples in this community right here in Wheaton. So 2006, if I do the math right, that's about 12 years ago. Does that sound right? Is that 11? There was a mother from the church who her heart's passion and desire was that for her child and her grandchildren, their family, to really know the Lord and to really know that community of the church. And so I picked up on her passion and her heart, and I began to carry that for her as I wrote those names down on this prayer card, to know Jesus, to know his incredible love, and to know him through his mission in the world. And so over the years, I've been praying for this particular family. I look back on all these prayer cards, and I keep seeing their name recurring. Not so much in the last few years. You know, she's no longer carrying that mission. She's gone home to be with the Lord. And yet I'm reminded this week to keep on that mission, to continue to keep praying her heart, her prayer for this family. It's not like that mission ended with her. It's continuing in my heart to this day, while I'm still breathing, praying and asking God, how do you want to use me to bring these people, after all these years, one step closer to you? So this is the church's mission, making followers who make followers of Jesus. It's God's mission, and so we have this mission that God has invited us to. And it's an invitation for everyone to come to God. So God invites the church to enter into his mission. Did you know that the church doesn't necessarily own the mission? The mission has a church. In other words, the mission isn't necessarily ours. It's God's mission, and the church exists to fulfill his mission in the world. That's why we're here. It's not our work. It's God's work. He calls us into this. He sends us out. He renews and creates the opportunity. He makes all things new. We're just invited to come alongside of what God is already doing in the world. And it's an amazing discovery when we enter into this mission. You know, see, while we're on mission, we grow in our relationship with Jesus. You know, you think that sometimes as a pastor, or I think maybe, that I get to this place where, you know, I'm becoming this mature Christian where I've kind of got this figured out. But I realize when I think I get to that place, God just undoes me and teaches me something almost brand new. And I'm like, wow, why didn't I see that? How did I miss that? And that new thing for me right now is this whole idea that if I really want to continue growing in my walk with the Lord and my relationship with the Lord and go deeper with God and to know him more, then it's through his mission. It's through engaging in the mission of God with Jesus. And as I do that, I'm discovering some amazing, amazing things about God that I could never know apart from being in his mission, being part of his mission. You know, Mary, in the beginning of this passage with John, there's this great reunion with Jesus. You know, this intimacy that she experiences with the risen Lord. And we desire that. We want to know that in our own hearts. We want to just have that grace and love just flowing over our hearts and our lives. But, you know, it's also not stopping there. It's the calling out. It's the sending out for Mary of going into the mission. So it's the intimacy and the mission. It's that deep love of God and that calling out. It's the have of the grace and love of God and the have to of going out and sharing that love in the world. So the amazing thing is that God invites us into his work and invites us into the lives of those around us where he's working. You know, we're followers making followers of Jesus. And wow, that's amazing. In 2011, I had the opportunity on my prayer list, I see, to visit with a family that had been referred to me. They came to share or came to talk to with me for some guidance. About 6 years ago, this family showed up and asked me some questions with two of their family members. They were going through a tough patch, and we talked and we met a couple times, and then they went their way, and from time to time I would say hi with them, but they ended up on my prayer list here. And all the while, God was at work in ways that neither they nor I understood of what was going on. God wasn't done blessing each other through that prayer time. One of the members of that family started showing up at church, and on a Christmas Eve several years later, the whole family came and sat right up here in the front row that Christmas Eve, and then got on an Alpha course and gathered around the table and began to have conversations about what it meant to know Jesus and to walk with him, and that person gave their life to Jesus and also experienced some amazing healing and is continuing to experience that. And today, they're part of the church, and we're journeying together and walking this out, this knowing Jesus and following his mission. That was 6 years ago. Today, they're part of our body. You know, the only reason we're still breathing right now is to engage in God's mission. To ask God, how do you want to use me in the people in my life? Does anybody know our mission statement here at church? Just our brief little tagline about what we're all about? Ask the person next to you if they know what our brief mission is in the church. And see if there's any recognition. Just lean over and say, do you know what the mission of the church is? Let me give you a hint. If you look on the front cover of the bulletin. You see it? What does it say? Followers making followers of Jesus. That's right. That's our mission statement. And you know, that's what we're called to. We want every person on mission with Jesus. And so as we think about that in the coming years, and as we go through this five-step telling others the story of Jesus over the next 5 weeks, I hope you can come and be part of this series and learn more about what it means to walk into those have-tos that the Lord has for us. And as we do, I hope that by the end of 2017, each one of us will have a story to tell about how God used us in the life of someone around us to help them come one step closer to Jesus. You know, and if we think about it, you know, 150 people here or a couple hundred people here, you know, reaching out and God using us to impact our world. And if we think about 300,000 people in the covenant churches, you know, right now that might be doing this over the next year. And we think of all the others in the world that are following God's mission, you know, that becomes an amazing movement of the Holy Spirit that changes the world. Do you want to be part of changing the world? That's our have to. Followers making followers of Jesus. It's why we're still here. You know, this is the amazing thing. Everything else that God invites us to can be done in heaven. Do you realize that? You know, we can grow in our understanding of God in heaven. We'll be present with God, face to face with Jesus. We can experience extraordinary worship in heaven. I mean, the scriptures depict a little bit about that, but wow, angelic voices and joining in those holy choirs, raising our song and voices, dancing, I don't know, whatever your style is, I'm sure it's being played in heaven. And we can strengthen our community in heaven, that bond, that relationship that we have with one another, but there's one thing we cannot do in heaven, and that is, in heaven, we can't help people find their way back to God. That is our mission here on earth. While we still have breath, that's why we exist. In 2005, so this is 12 years ago, the year that I came here that spring, we had, before we came, I have this prayer card on there. I just have three names on that card that year. And one of them was a young man named Ryan, and I had been had the opportunity to be part of Ryan's life. I was invited by his grandparents to go visit him in a law enforcement center. Ryan had made some poor choices and got into some difficult situations and ended up in jail and facing some very serious charges. Very young man, a crucial time in his life, and he didn't know what to do. And so I was going to seminary at the time. Each week I'd just stop in the jail, and we'd spend about an hour together. And during those conversations, he had opportunity to really take a look at his life and to, you know, get clean and to, you know, just begin to understand what God was doing in his life. And as we shared those messages, he always looked forward to me coming. It might have been because, you know, he was bored otherwise, but one day I came and he couldn't wait to see me. He couldn't wait to tell me what was going on, you know, as they're allowing us to, you know, get into the rooms and open the doors. I could just see he was, you know, just waiting to talk to me. And so when he sat down, he says, "You're never going to guess what happened." And I said, "What happened?" And he said, I was reading the Bible like you told me to. I was thinking about what we said, and I asked, the Lord into my life. I was like, "Wow, that's amazing." He says, "Yeah," and he was so excited. And from there, he began to just really seek and understand what that meant for him to take on that mission of Christ and to be loved by God and then to bless others through that. And I have lost touch with him since, but, you know, over the years, I would hear little bits and pieces and find out that, you know, he was doing pretty well. He was on the right track. That was neat. That was great. 12 years ago. There's two other names on that list. These were both family members. One of them was my sister Terry Manny. And she had been on my list for 2 years because I had begun doing this the year before. And I never really had the opportunity to have a lot of conversation with Terry. I don't know if I took this all that seriously at the time. But within another year, Terry had a heart attack, and she had died. Very unexpectedly, had no real signs of that coming. And I was shocked. And I still, deep in my heart, I'm unsettled about that. I just don't know what the outcome is for Terry. And there's one other name, and that is Jim Shackleton, my cousin. He's a year younger than me. And Jim, last year at this time, Jim was struggling with a terminal diagnosis with cancer. And I called him, and he invited me to come and see him. And over the next couple of visits, I shared my story with him. And he said, "You know, Tim, that's what I want." And he prayed so honestly for the Lord to forgive him, and he trusted in Jesus and to forgive his sins. And he asked Jesus to give him a new life. And when I left that day, I sensed that God was certainly there and at work. And his wife called me a couple days later and said that he had experienced a real peace that day, and it was lingering with them and continuing. And his family and I, Cheryl, we all gathered around him the next week around his bed, and we baptized him, leaning over his bed and splashing water all over, get him all wet, and rejoicing in this amazing new life that he was experiencing. You know, a lot of tears, really good ones. You know, a believing brother in Jesus. And Jim passed away a few weeks later, and we gathered to celebrate that he was rejoicing in his newfound life. You know, the only reason that we're still breathing right now is to engage in God's mission, to ask God, "How do you want me to bless the people in my life?"